You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today's 10/15/21. Well, interesting. You never know where life is going to take you. Person you're about to hear from, Douglas J. Beck, started out in IT procurement for a large healthcare company, and then he started getting into real estate. And well, we'll let Doug tell the story. If you got a question, issue, anything you want to discuss with me, just send me an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Well, Doug, it's great to have you on the show. So
thank you, Carrie. Appreciate it.
A lot of people I know get into real estate. A lot of them don't start out with that intention in mind. And it's right. Something catches their eye, a property, maybe even you bought your own home. You sold it pretty quickly thereafter, made a large profit, whatever it is. More millionaires, more wealthy people in the U.S. have acquired their wealth through real estate than any other area, including tech. So just tell us, you were in IT, obviously you were paid. It's a highly compensated profession.
Right.
A shortage of decent people always.
Absolutely.
Even with outsourcing, but
I was gonna say, man, outsourcing was a big part of it. So
So what led you to real estate?
Sure. So just a little bit of background. So I worked in corporate IT and procurement for almost 10 years at Johnson & Johnson, and rotated in a number of different roles. And so we talk about outsourcing and offshoring and stuff, and there was probably 10 times the number of people, if not more, at that time that were working offshore and that were basically vendors of the company versus folks that were onshore in the US and the different site locations that we had. So it's a big deal in large companies. It's becoming a bigger deal, I think, in smaller companies as well. So there's a couple of resources I can share with your audience if they are looking to do this sort of outsourcing model and if they're looking at leveraging the economies of the world. But ultimately, my story, kind of sort of happened by accident. I guess subconsciously, I was always looking for a means to exit out of the corporate world. Once I realized kind of what it was really about, it didn't fit in my model of like entrepreneurial everything. So like I've been around, entrepreneurship from a very young age. My family's had businesses since I was about 9 years old, at least that I can remember, maybe earlier than that. My mom might have been doing some stuff on the side with like different odd job type stuff. But my sister and my dad and my mom started a hair salon, and that led into, that family business, which is still open to this day, up in Branchburg, New Jersey, DJ's Hair Studio. And saw that from a young age. My dad was actually also a J&J guy, and he had, had built a career, if you would, in corporate. So I saw that as a sort of like a solidarity, a sort of certainty and underpinning, if you would. But then I also saw what he was doing with the business. And I guess subconsciously, I said to myself, I can probably do that when I get older, and see if that might be more what I was looking for. So as I got a little bit older in my teenage years, at that time, it was probably in the 90s, I guess, when technology was starting to really kind of pick up some speed. The internet was coming about. There was 386 computers and 46 computers. And my dad was able to get a computer from J&J that they were letting go back because it was basically being discontinued or being whatever, retired. They were upgrading their systems. And he was able to legally and compliantly get a wiped clean, device that he brought home that kind of I tinkered with and was able to learn a lot about technology. But that even in itself was entrepreneurial, I think, and kind of looking for ways that I can learn about this new thing that I was very unfamiliar with. And nowadays we see kids with tablets. I have my three children have tablets, and they have devices that they can use to watch stuff and see all kinds of crazy stuff, which you got to be careful with, of course. But it's just so much more accessible compared to when I was even a kid, which is not that long ago. But that taught me, I think, a lot about kind of the exploration of entrepreneurial type things. And so combining that with what I saw and kind of taking me through kind of fast forwarding in my teenage years into college, I did a lot of technology sort of side hustles, if you would, website development, technical support, technical IT kind of on-site, like helping business owners with their IT stuff. I remember the guy next door, our family salon, had like a system set up, a brand new, QuickBooks system at the time. It was like in the late 90s, I would say. And he didn't know how to set everything up. So I was only like 16, 17 years old. My dad came in and helped me like from a financial side. That's what he did, was financial and accounting type work. I was a technology guy. So I helped set up the system, and I remember getting paid like 15, 20 bucks an hour, like 16, 17 years old, doing basically IT consulting for a guy who was in a small business. So that's kind of where I started seeing the entrepreneurial starting to bubble. And then that led into looking at the different ways of doing stuff. And then kind of in college, was thinking about becoming a real estate agent. Never really got into the whole licensing. Didn't get into the, you know, I didn't have time. I didn't make time to do the testing, all that stuff. But then when I was tinkering with a different business in the energy business, which is a side thing I was doing, I found this thing with real estate investing that was unique, and it was something that intrigued me. So it was talking about like assigning contracts, assignments of contract, which I just never heard the term. I was doing some stuff with contracts in large pharma and procurement, and I just never noticed there was like these assignment clauses that you can, you know, depending on the contract, sometimes they say they're not assignable, and sometimes they say they are. If they don't say that they're not assignable, you can assign them. So it's all this legal stuff. I'm like, well, this is interesting. But this guy was saying you can make like 5, 10, 15 grand from just like selling the contract to somebody else. And so I did some more research and then hooked up with this company that taught you how to do it. And lo and behold, after about a 6 or 8 month period of time, closed my first transaction, learned the business from doing it, you know, from listening and learning, but also doing it. And then fast forward, we've done a couple hundred of those to date in New Jersey and also Florida and a couple other places. But yeah, that's kind of how it happened, I guess you could say, just from very early age, the entrepreneurship, and then bridging into technology, but then always having that sort of desire and drive to want to be on my own, doing my own thing. And then finally finding something that I can connect with that made sense, that was something different. And that niche, if you would, within real estate investing, this assignment of contract wholesale business effectively.
All right. So how do you make money in real estate now? We're talking post-pandemic, we're talking inflation, we're talking real estate prices really shooting up to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
Interest rates still low. How do you make money at it now?
How do you make money on it? So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but I would say in the current market, it's very challenging to do the wholesale flips. In fact, our business has dialed back a lot. We were doing 5 or 6 a month. We might do 1 or 2 every other month at this point from a wholesale flip perspective. To be fair, you know, I have a small staff, but most of my team currently focuses on our renovation projects. So we do have active renovation projects in New Jersey and also one in Florida. And so I would say for folks out there that have, you know, some element of understanding of construction, or they have a high level of risk tolerance, because construction and fixing and flipping houses is a very risky business. It's a lot of speculation, but if you have that and you have that desire, for sure, a fix and flip is a possibility. But I would say, you know, somebody said recently to me, and he's a very smart guy, he's been in the business decades, he said, fixing and flipping is a business, but buying and holding is an investment. So I think that if you want to be a true real estate investor, you know, building up a portfolio of rentals or doing something that's at least semi-passive or fully passive, even like private lending, is something to consider, because that's something that's safe, if you would, from some of the dynamics of the market. The supply and demand, like you said, Carrie, it's really weird right now. Like, there's very low supply in general, and an extreme amount of demand on the retail side, as well as on the investment side. And so you're competing with a lot of people that are all fighting for the same couple of fish that are, you know, leftovers, basically, if you would. So the short answer to that, I gave you the long version there, is I think it kind of depends on your risk tolerance. But I would say what you can't go wrong with is finding a property that's a potential rental property, whether that be a single family, multifamily, large multifamily, whatever you can financially get your head around that you can add some value to, meaning that you can actually do some work to it, improve the rents, you know, get some better tenants in there, whatever, and then keep that as a rental, refi it out, keep it, build the equity, but also get some cash flow, and slowly but surely build up a portfolio. And that's basically defined as what some people call the BRRR method, B-R-R-R, buy, renovate, rent, and then refinance. And so we can handle that. I mentioned to you before when we were chatting a little bit, my company now I work with is a fund based out of New Jersey. We do a lot of those kind of loans, if you would, for landlords that are looking to buy and basically bridge from purchase renovation money. So we can help you get most of the money for the purchase and the renovation, and we can then actually help you refinance. Once you build that value up and you stabilize the asset with a tenant, we can refinance back into a long-term 30-year product that's actually commercial, meaning that it's not a personal mortgage. It's not a DTI-based or income-based type of mortgage. It's not, we're not mortgage lenders in that respect. We actually look at the asset and we look at your company and your the value that's there, basically. So that's really cool. You can scale that up to many, many properties. You don't have any limit. Fannie Freddie has like a 10-property minimum or maximum, excuse me. We can go up to as many as you can afford to keep, basically.
All right. And so is inflation an investor's friend, or is it investor's enemy?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Doré Copper Mining is a premier, near-term, high-grade copper and gold redevelopment opportunity with tremendous exploration potential only 14 kilometers from the town of Chibougamau in mine-friendly Quebec. Doré Copper is debt-free and owns a 2,700-ton-per-day mill with an 8 million-ton tailings facility ready to be used. There is already power to site, and it is accessible by paved highway and rail. Doré Copper aims to produce a profitable hub-and-spoke operation of over 100,000 gold-equivalent ounces per year, or over 60 million pounds of copper equivalent by 2024. Because of the existing infrastructure and location, a low capex is anticipated to recommence production. Doré Copper trades under DCMC in Toronto and under DRCMF on the OTC. To learn more, go to dorecopper.com. That's dorecopper.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Inflation and invest, that's a good question. I mean, I guess it depends on what side of the coin you're on. If you're buying right now, it could help you, I suppose, in the sense that, you know, the money might be a little bit cheaper, but everything else is super expensive. So the interest rates are super low. Money is very accessible, but that causes, you know, the fact that the buying power increases though. So then it's going to economically impact in terms of higher prices, typically what we've seen. But if you're selling right now, that's definitely, in my opinion, going to help you, because like right now, our fix and flips, you know, you're seeing at or above asking price, and sometimes some crazy stuff, like people are buying properties that mostly would be bought with mortgages. They're buying cash and they're buying $100,000 to $200,000 more than what you're listing them at. If they're in the, you know, even if they're $500,000, $600,000 houses, I've heard some stories. Unfortunately, I haven't seen too many of those myself. I've seen some of those, you know, 20-30K over asking, but not really like six figure over asking. But there's some, you hear stories where people get 50 offers in 2 days, stuff like that. So I think the buying power has increased because of inflation and because of the surplus of capital. And I think that's causing a feeding frenzy, if you would, of the demand. But at the same time, things are more expensive. So it's really tricky to say for sure. I would say one thing about it is if you have a portfolio of rentals, then right now, because of the value and what things are worth and the economics of things, I'm seeing a lot of really seasoned landlords that have, you know, large portfolios. I have a few of them as clients right now, all across the country. They're refinancing their rental portfolio and getting really low rates, and then also tapping into that equity, because we have a cash out refinance program where you can basically go up to 75, maybe even 80% of the value today. We can refinance out, give it back to you. It's not profit, obviously. You still have an obligation to pay, but because of the way that the interest rates are so low, and because of, you know, the new mortgage, basically new money is going to be cheaper than the old money a lot of times, unless you just recently refinanced, you might actually walk out with the same payment or less of a payment and still get like a $50,000 or $100,000 refi check at the end when we actually close the loan. So it depends on how you look at it, I guess, is what I'm saying. But that's just some feedback, some thoughts to share.
All right. So there's still opportunities, but they're getting harder and harder. What about all these hedge funds that are buying up homes all over the place and adding them to their portfolio? You're competing against them, aren't you?
There's this talk. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's the concept I've heard tossed around, but like shadow inventory. So like, you know, stuff that's available, but no one ever sees it because the hedge fund just eat it up. There's packaged portfolios. There's note pools, like, you know, off market note investing is big, where they actually take like non performing notes and they'll buy the note portfolio of notes. And then they'll basically either foreclose or work out a deal to take back the property and buy this massive portfolio. So, you know, we operate not in the retail. I mean, we're kind of like in the retail investor space, but not the retail buyer space, if that makes any sense. So I don't have a great pulse on the sort of hedge fund side of things necessarily. But I would say from what I know, there is definitely still a lot of activity happening. And I would say, you know, follow the bigger guy. Like if you see that there's a lot of activity happening in your metro area, for example, I live in Sarasota, Florida. So just north of us is Tampa. And there's a lot of activity happening in Tampa, even in Sarasota, other parts of Florida. I want to follow that, right? I want to see like, okay, if there's big money buying these properties in bulk, then I should be considering buying whatever I can catch, you know, that's a decent deal, maybe on one or two properties at a time type of thing. So that's what I would say. There's definitely some stuff out there, but you're not going to get the deals you got even a couple years ago from what we're seeing. There's going to be definitely less of the discount. And we're doing large scale renovations on the construction side. So like we're doing $100,000, $200,000 renovation projects in North Jersey. Versus we were doing for a while, like 30 to 50K renovation projects, just doing interior remodels. So you might have to go into a new kind of like value add to get to kind of the product you want to have, so you can actually build a profit into it. So that's another thing to consider as well, if you're kind of like a retail investor, you know, looking to do a couple projects at a time.
All right. Interesting. And so I guess the question is it too late for most investors? That's a question. And number two is, are we going to see a major uptick in foreclosures at this point, or have prices risen so much that it's bailed out even the most imprudent home purchase?
There's a couple of really loaded but really good questions. So the first one, I can't remember how you asked it exactly, but I think it said, is there still room for anybody to still invest? I think it sounds like, is there anything left? Kind of, is that what you said there? Kind of, can't paraphrase that first one.
Is it too late? Is the
too late? Yeah. It's not really too late. I don't think it's too late. It's too late maybe to do what we were doing 2 years ago, 3 years ago before COVID. I mean, COVID changed a lot of factors. Most of the top guys that I know that are real estate brokers that have really the data driven, which I think we all need to be data driven, but these guys are like, they literally read MLS activity. Like there's one particular guy down in South Florida and Southwest Florida that just all he is about data. And he looks at the MLS data every week, every month. And just the amount of like activity is just crazy. And I think it's not just like the big funds that are doing this. I think it's just retail activity as well. I think it depends on your market. I think as far as too late, I mean, maybe it's probably too late to do kind of, like I said, what I was doing in New Jersey, in central New Jersey. When I was up in Jersey, we were doing, you know, a few deals. We'd buy one or two properties a month. We'd put in 50, 60 grand maybe. And we'd sell it for like a 30 to 50K net profit. That it's probably too late to do that in that market at this point. If you're in a market that you were able to do those kind of things a couple of years ago, then yes, it's too late. But again, you have to shift your strategy a little bit, I think. Be a little more creative, maybe try something new. But I think you also have to be prepared. It's never too late to be prepared or be more prepared than you were yesterday. Meaning learn how to do something you haven't done or start reading about it, start doing research on it. We as a fund, so at the fund side, we can definitely give some education, if you would, about what we're seeing in the market, because we actually lend to real estate investors all across the country. So we have the access to sort of the knowledge and know-how of what other people are doing in many different markets. So I see that. I'm seeing more of that. I'm seeing activity in Texas. I'm seeing activity in Illinois, even Chicago for buy and holds. I'm seeing stuff in Philadelphia. Lots of development happened in Philadelphia, Florida for sure. Not to say these other markets don't matter, but there's an infusion of like new capital, new people moving into Florida and Texas and other sort of metro markets all across the country. I think we got to think about that and then see where you fit into the equation. It's not the time to kind of stay idle. I think that's what I'm saying, you know?
All right. Hey, well, we appreciate you coming on, sharing your insights into the market and your experiences. People want to find out more about you, connect with you for funding. Is there a way for you to do that?
Yeah, for sure. You can go to douglasjbeck.com, douglasjbeck.com. And right on that website, there's a little video intro of myself. You can meet me for a few minutes and hear some more about my story. And right below that, there's a button you can click on to schedule 15 minutes with me. No obligation, no cost, nothing like that. We'll talk about what you got going on. And then also even below that, there's another section that kind of talks about my companies and has punch outs to each of the different websites. You can kind of see more about my sort of portfolio of companies and what we offer and kind of how it all works. And I'm happy to talk about any of that with anyone who's interested. I'd love to speak to any of your listeners here and see how we can add some value to their real estate and otherwise.
All right. Very cool. All right. Well, appreciate you coming on. Questions, comments, shoot me an email. If you have a question for Doug, KL@KerryLutz.com, we'll forward it off to him and get you an answer. Doug, been a pleasure. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Kerry. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.